Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
State Committee, thank you. This is WBUR. I'm Bob Oakes. President Trump holds a political rally in New Hampshire tonight, his first campaign appearance in the state since 2016. Trump returns to the very same arena in Manchester, where on the eve of the 2016 general election, he spoke to an estimated crowd of nearly 12,000 people. A very large question looms now. What will his reception be at this affair? After the mass shootings in Texas and Ohio, and after a spate of tough criticism in recent days, in which several of the Democrats running for president have labeled him a racist and white supremacist. Returning now to discuss the president's visit and how they're feeling about the president at this moment are three of our Republican voters from New Hampshire. Middle school biology teacher Leah Walchko of Manchester. Hi, Leah.
Hi.
UNH professor of marketing and hospitality, a hotel expert, Dan Innes of Lee, New Hampshire.
Hello there.
And Fergus Cullen, former chair of the New Hampshire Republican State Committee and the only never-Trumper in our group today. Hi, Fergus.
Hey there, Bob.
All right, down to business here. A new poll from the Survey Center at the University of New Hampshire shows Trump maintaining an 80% job approval rating among New Hampshire Republicans. So I'm wondering how you folks are feeling about how the president is handling the job today. Dan, why don't you start?
When you look at the policies and the way that he's governing as president, he's doing a pretty darn good job. Is he doing it elegantly? Probably not. But when you look at the results are there. The economy's solid. I think everything's moving in the right direction.
Fergus?
I am tired of the narcissism. I'm tired of the constant lying. I'm tired of the stoking of racial animosity. And the idea that this president is doing any of the policy outcomes deliberately or intentionally, I think, is far-fetched. You know, even a stopped clock is right twice a day. And I think we've had some good luck, including in foreign policy, that we haven't been taken advantage of. But I don't give him any points for tax cuts, a couple of lucky judge nominations, and some regulatory relief.
I don't really look at anything he's done and think that was sheer luck. You know, like when he calls somebody Little Rocket Man and it moves something in the right direction, that was by design. That wasn't luck.
Partially to Fergus's point, that same poll from UNH I mentioned a moment ago also found the president has a net favorability rating, a positive rating of 66% among New Hampshire Republicans, a measure of how voters feel about Donald Trump as a person. 66%, of course, dramatically lower than his job approval rating in the same cohort. So I'm wondering, Dan, if you feel Donald Trump, though you like the policies he's pursuing and the results you say he's getting, is he a man with a character flaw?
He may be a little narcissistic, and yet I think he has the ability, at least through his advisors and maybe on his own, to see the big picture with a lot of big issues. I think his approach to China is a solid one. I said 4 to 6 years ago that China is much more dependent on us than we are on them. And a long-term trade war with China will decimate their economy, not ours.
Lee, is there ever going to be a point where the president's character flaws, if you see them, will become too much for you?
I see his character flaws. I do. And if there was evidence that he was involved with what was going on with Jeffrey Epstein, perhaps, right? I mean, yes, there are things that could be beyond the pale for even your Trump voter. But I don't suspect that that's the case, because I think if it had been, we would have all heard about it long ago. I see him as like that uncle at Thanksgiving that tells the story and it gets better every time he tells it, right? You call that lying? It is, technically, but it's more of an embellishment. And he starts to believe the details himself. And it's the biggest rally of ever, huge. When I look at a politician who's very polished and well-spoken and they tell something that's untrue, that I see as more of a lie.
Fergus, you want to respond to that, since she was looking right at you when she said it?
You know, I've got three kids aged 15, 10, and 8, and trying to explain to them that this is not normal is awfully hard because they haven't seen the alternative. They're too young. I can't set aside his fundamental unfitness for public office that we see on display every day.
I want to talk about racism, white nationalism, and guns for a few minutes. President Trump's use of incendiary language, vulgarity, and bigotry at some of the rallies he's held around the country is widely known, and I'm wondering if you folks think the president is actually stoking xenophobic violence around the country with this rhetoric.
I mean, yes, of course he is. I mean, he calls this an invasion. He treats people as subhuman, groups of our neighbors. I mean, I can't believe this person's in the White House and we're having this kind of conversation.
I don't even really hear racism allegations anymore. My brain now filters those all out because it's been used as a weapon and inaccurately used for so long that it's starting to lose its ability to have any meaning as a word.
Dan, let me ask you a question that comes right out of that. A recent review by the New York Times finds that incendiary language is being used with increasing frequency by right-wing media stars like Ann Coulter, Rush Limbaugh, an uptick in words including invasion and replacement with regard to immigrants. Is Donald Trump fueling the anti-immigrant fire when he repeats anti-immigrant tweets or posts from those on the far right?
When you hear the word invasion, I think it's in reference to those folks who are coming across the border illegally. The immigration laws are broken. The wait times to get into this country legally are growing exponentially. And when the immigration system is broken and people have to wait 4 years to get a green card, they're inclined to say, I'm coming in illegally. So it's on us to start to look at these immigration laws so we can process people in the proper way, expeditiously, and stop the invasion, that is, those coming in illegally.
I hear this argument a lot that I'm not against immigration, I'm just against illegal immigration. So then you say, okay, well, let's make it easier for people to come to this country legally. Are you okay with that?
Oh, yes.
And the answer is no, in many cases, in which case I say, ah, so you're really anti-immigrant. It's not a question of legal versus illegal.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it has to be easier. We had a graduate in finance some years ago at UNH who wanted to stay in America, and he couldn't. So he comes here, he takes a seat from an American at our university that's state-funded, modestly, and then he's forced to leave to go back to his home country and compete against us. Makes no sense to me.
Crazy.
Right. That's the stuff that needs to be fixed.
I want to ask a question related to the El Paso shooting. Some critics think that the president's tweets and messaging played some sort of role in the El Paso incident because they say that the alleged shooter used language in his manifesto that could have been driven by Donald Trump's language. I'm wondering what your take is on that. Leah.
I don't think it's fair to blame any one human being for the acts of another. Donald Trump is the manifestation of the time we live in. He wouldn't have been elected if the people didn't respond to him.
Fergus, you want to weigh in?
Well, he seems to be racially minded and has been ever since he announced for president. He had been as a businessman in New York before. I'm hesitant to use words like racist, but the very fact that we're even having a debate about whether he's a racist or only racially minded is nuts. Either one is unacceptable in a president of the United States.
I think all groups are racially minded. Race is a big part of our community discussion. It's on the TV every night. It's tiring to be told that I'm a racist all the time. And that's how you get somebody like Trump elected. People say, I'm tired of it.
Let's talk a little bit about guns. Last week, in the wake of the mass shooting deaths in Texas and Ohio, New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu vetoed three New Hampshire bills aimed at curbing gun violence. The bills included background checks for virtually all commercial firearm sales and gun transfers. Yes or no, do you agree with what Governor Sununu did? Dan?
Yes, I do.
Fergus?
You know, I'm not familiar with the details of the bills.
All right. Leah?
Yes, I agree with him.
So do you hope that Donald Trump addresses gun violence in his visit to New Hampshire tonight? What do you hope he says? And more importantly, what do you want him to do, Leah?
It's not him. It's us that has to do something. He can, you know, inspire us. He could, in theory, be an inspiring figure on the subject. But it's us. Those guns have been in the population all along. Why do 3 in 10 millennials on the YouGov survey that just came out say they're lonely all the time or often? What is changing about our society that equals nihilism. Making a gun law is not going to do anything. New Hampshire's gun laws are very lax. We have the third largest gun population compared to Massachusetts, a draconian compared to ours, and they have more gun homicides than we do.
This is Dan. You know, I go back to when I was in school. The doors were all unlocked. This was in Columbus, Ohio, big city. No one shot up schools. No one shot up nightclubs. No one shot up Walmarts. Something has changed, as Leah said. And I think a big part of the responsibility lies with families and with society in general. And I think social media is partly to blame as well, and the internet, because there's so much more information out there now than there used to be about how to pull this off, how to get a gun, buy something on the dark web, get a silencer off the dark web, do what you want to do. We have to take responsibility ourselves. We have to demand of our government officials that we have some connection between mental health and law enforcement. That's tough, and it's going to be tricky because of HIPAA laws. But doggone it, in almost every one of these cases, there was an identifiable incident in the past with the shooter that should have set us off and warned us, and we couldn't share it, or we ignored it.
So you're in favor of red flag laws then, taking guns away from people because of concerns voiced by law enforcement or family members or people familiar with a potential shooter?
As I say, it's a touchy subject, but I think in legitimate cases, to protect the public interest, that makes sense.
I just worry that people that need mental health treatment will not seek it.
They need to seek it.
I worry about people not seeking help when they need it.
So therefore, they will not be identified?
So therefore, they will not have to worry. A lot of people would not go to the doctor if they thought that meant that they could have their guns taken away. People are vicious and mean to each other. They'll also make allegations against people that they don't like or that they're involved in some kind of a legal dispute with or they want to be involved in one. And there's a lot of reasons why we should be very careful about the thought that anybody can make an allegation against anybody else and you can have your right, because it's a right, taken away from you.
Leah, I agree with you on this. I think it has to be a legitimate professional documentation that this is a problem, not just your neighbor saying, Leah's crazy, take
right.
her gun.
Yeah.
Right? That doesn't work.
Yeah, I don't want to see somebody who's, I don't want to see a schizophrenic person running around with a
right.
with a gun.
Exactly.
I don't either.
That's
but
right.
it needs to be very carefully done so that it's not.
Tight guardrails.
Yeah.
All right, I want to talk for a little bit about the trade war. The stock market, as we all know, is in a roller coaster. The Fed has cut interest rates, and while the Trump administration has announced it will delay some of its impending tariffs on products from China until late September, there isn't yet an end in sight to the trade war, which is putting major pressure on many U.S. industries and American farmers. Are you worried about the economy because of the trade war?
This is Fergus. You know, I'm old enough to remember when the Republican Party was a party that believed in free trade. I'm old enough to remember that because I'm older than five. Now, listen, I used to think all Republicans believed in this, and Donald Trump started arguing against free trade in his campaign in 2016, and I saw the Republican Party switch. But tariffs are taxes on American consumers. The idea that they're paid for by China, I think, is ridiculous. And the idea that there are winners in trade wars is like having there be winners in nuclear wars.
Leah.
When you offshore your production capacity, you are offshoring your wealth as a nation. We cannot be a wealthy nation if we sell hamburgers to each other. You have to be able to produce things.
I think one of the key words in this discussion is free trade. And I don't believe China participates in free trade. They'll dump products here. We've seen evidence of that. They steal our intellectual property shamelessly. I think that we're in a strong position to work with China. They're very dependent on our consumer economy. We're dependent on their production capacity, but I think less so. There are other places to source things, and maybe some of that will come back here. And I'm glad to see the president taking advantage of that to try to get China to play fair in the international markets, which they tend not to do.
So I'm wondering how you're all going to feel about President Trump if the economy falters. And I ask mindful of the fact that many economists say that we're headed for a recession next year and maybe a deep recession.
This is Dan. I think, you know, normal economic cycles can hit any president. It's entirely possible we'll see a downturn. I don't see any evidence there's going to be a catastrophic downturn.
You never see them coming, do you,
Dan? No, you don't. You don't. You don't. But if you pay attention, I mean, you could have seen the banking crisis coming. And I don't hear a lot of economists screaming right now that we're in deep, deep trouble.
Again, I'm old enough to remember when conservatives believed that presidents didn't set economic policy, that government doesn't create jobs, that people and entrepreneurs do. And I still hold to these old-fashioned conservative beliefs.
Middle school biology teacher Leah Walchko of Manchester, UNH professor of marketing and hospitality Dan Innes of Lee, New Hampshire, Fergus Cullen, former chair of the New Hampshire Republican State Committee. Thank you.